Have you read my Amazon number one best-selling book, 101 Biggest Mistakes Nonprofits Make and How You Can Avoid Them Yet? It's the book that I wrote with expertise from over 20 nonprofit leaders and their 300 years of combined experience. You can download it for free today. Just visit andrewolson.net and go to the free resources tab on my site.
Welcome to the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, your home for all things fundraising and nonprofit leadership. I'm your host, Andrew Olson. Before we get into today's episode, I've got a favor to ask. If you like what you hear on this podcast, please go over to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and rate the show and leave us a review. It helps us reach more people and make a bigger impact in the world. So thank you in advance for doing that. Now let's get into today's episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Andrew Olson. I'm here with Matt Kahn. Matt is the Director of Direct Marketing at the National Republican Congressional Committee, the NRCC. Matt, hey, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Andrew, for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, excited for you to be here. Before we get into really the questions for the day, tell us a little bit about what it means to be the Direct Marketing Director at the NRCC and what that really entails.
Yeah, absolutely. It's for me, it's an incredible opportunity, a dream come true. As someone that born and raised in Los Angeles, that moved out here, you know, 5-6 years ago, across the country, not knowing a single soul or quite frankly what I was doing when I moved out here, just a dream to make an impact at our nation's capital. And now I get to spend every single day working towards hopefully helping to put good people in office, impact change. And so the idea that the work that I do day in and day out actually makes a real impact on my community, my friends, my family, and the country. I mean, it's a job, but it's really a passion project for me. So I consider myself blessed every day to be here.
That's awesome. So I'm curious, like in the nonprofit sector, we often joke about like, no fundraiser got into their role on purpose, right? You didn't go to school for it. You didn't train for it. Is the same true for you, or was like this part of a path that you've been on for a longer period?
No, I just fell into it. You know, prior to being a fundraiser, I was a campaign guy. Right out of college, was doing presidentials, gubernatorials, Senate, congressional runs, down all the way down to assembly races. And I was primarily working in Las Vegas, Nevada, where I had earned my education. And after the 2018 election cycle, I was really just looking for any excuse that I possibly could to come out to DC. through some connections that I had in the campaign world, I had an opportunity to come out to DC. You know, quite frankly, the idea of mail marketing or any sort of direct marketing wasn't at the forefront for me. I was just looking for any excuse to come out here, see what I was made of, and figure it out from there. And what turned of it is an obsession and a passion. So again, I can't say it enough. I'm a lucky guy.
Awesome. So I'm curious, you know, I was looking at some data recently in the charitable and political space. And one of the things I saw is that from 22 to 23, there was roughly a 50% decrease in the number of gifts processed. When I say that, I mean the number of primarily like direct mail gifts for political causes, specifically in 2023. And then there's also either a flat or slight decrease in the average gift. I'm curious, did you see the same kind of trend at the Congressional Committee? And what do you make of that trend industry-wide?
Yeah, so it's more than just a black and white answer, right? So, you know, I think in the 2020 cycle, obviously we were in COVID. It was a fundraiser's dream. You know, people were at home watching Fox News or whatever their media outlet is. And they were getting stimulus checks and they had nothing else to do than to pay attention and to give. And so what that created was this incredible environment for fundraising. And then we get past the 2020 election, and for most of 2021 was a historic off year fundraising cycle for all marketers, really, especially in the political field. I mean, things were extremely successful, more than anyone could have possibly imagined. And so I don't want to say it was, you know, anything other than just a really good market and a good marketplace. And then, of course, you know, what we had saw towards the end of 2021, really in the fourth quarter, was the marketplace was starting to change. The economy was getting significantly worse under this administration. There was paper issues, as we all know, and, you know, things were really coming down on the fundraising space and the fundraising world. And so when you think of average gift, that definitely played a role into it. But what I think happened from 21 to 22 is that not enough people, especially in the political space, really paid attention to the writing on the wall that was happening towards the end of 2021. And so people think that we're in this election year, now's the time to really put the foot on the gas pedal like we always do, and let's get after it, let's raise some money. And so you go, most marketers, especially in the political space, spent a lot of time, especially in that first half of the year, you know, getting out there in acquisition, trying to build their files, trying to build all the money that they can for their campaigns respectively. And it didn't provide any dividends because the economy was so bad, inflation was so bad. And by nature, the average gift went down because people just didn't have the money to give. And so what you saw towards the second half of 2022 is people started tapering off their fundraising programs to a point where a lot of folks either completely stopped, cut their acquisition efforts, had to find ways to optimize their house files, whatever you may have it, it just continued to carry on. And so I think by nature, when you look at gross numbers of fundraising in the political space, I think that there is still that little bit of shell shock of what happened in 2022. And a lot of these programs and you know, even the small campaign folks or the smaller programs, there was, people were frightened by what had happened. And so by nature, it took some time to regroup, right? And I think it's up to folks like myself who do run big programs at a big organization to show that if you spend, you know, your time carefully, really dialed in on what you're doing day in and day out, from creative concepts to the data to anything that we do as marketers, you can push through. But, you know, to kind of round out your question is, you know, we went from a historically great marketplace to a historically bad marketplace. And now we're in this marketplace where we are, it's kind of so-so. The economy is still not great. People still, you know, have struggles with their own personal bottom line, and we're feeling it every day. So really our goal is, you know, what is the best bang for our buck? Who can we go and talk to? What kind of a compelling story can we share? And that, to me, is going to ultimately create the best long-term value. And of course, you know, if the economy does get better and we are in a better market, then us as marketers, it's our duty to put our foot on the gas pedal because that's what the market dictates. But, you know, you really have to follow the market in these sorts of things, especially in political, because you also have to imagine that it's different from the nonprofit space. We have to bring in a certain amount of dollars in the door by a certain amount of time so that it can be spent on getting up on television and, you know, doing other things for your campaigns. So, you know, I would say to anyone out there listening or inquiring about this sort of a issue from 22 to 23 and maybe what they're seeing now, is focus on the details, focus on your messaging and what you're really trying to sell and convey to your people, and make sure that your folks and your donors are with you along for the ride. And I can assure you that if you do all those little minute details, those are the folks that are going to have longstanding programs and really find the success that they're looking for.
Yeah, that tracks. So, you know, in the midst of everything you just described, you also have led a really significant growth in both the program and the revenue at the Congressional Committee. Talk to us a little bit about some of the things that you maybe implemented that were new or different, how you think about growth within your organization and just personally, and what the biggest wins and some of the biggest challenges were as you led that growth.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, I was at the committee last cycle as kind of a deputy to the program, and it was an unsuccessful cycle fundraising. It was a net loss program. And so the idea was coming into this thing was you had to get together with all of your partners, all the vendors that work with you to make this thing work, and chart out a path that really made sense, and to really understand what kind of a market that we were in and ways that we could optimize what we were doing. And so really the goal in the first place was to come to all the partners, all the people that have been working with us for year in and year out, and find ways to lower costs where we could, right? And understanding that, you know, the business of mail marketing has gone up in terms of cost, right? There are outside factors that are out of our control. And so any sort of cost points that we could control, we tried to do so. And the conversation was extremely transparent in that, you know, we don't want to lose out on opportunity. So it's extremely important for you to work with us here so that we can scale and we can grow back to be a program that we had been in years past. And I think when I came to the table with everyone, it was extremely well received. You know, the transparency was that if we don't get it right this election cycle, who knows if there's going to be a stomach for it in the future, right? And I think, you know, from a business perspective, it made sense for everyone to really get on board in ensuring that from a cost perspective, this was worth doing. And I think everyone also understood that, you know, as an institution, you know, being a committee, we have such a long history of doing such great work. And there's been times before my time where things were not good and you needed to rebound. And so it just really requires everyone getting on board to understand what you're trying to do in a rebound year. And that's exactly what we did. You know, we had, you know, in 2022, a significant loss to the program. And one of the biggest successes was, you know, a little bit over a $2.5 million net turnaround in 2023. And that was with some craziness that had gone in the House last year that I don't think was on anyone's bingo card, that no one could have possibly predicted. So that was really exciting. And, you know, we also really dug into the data. We wanted to figure out, you know, where were our donors in the height of 2020? Where did they come from? What were they responding to? And if, you know, how could we re-engage them, right? And so one of the wins on the House File RFM side was that, you know, in 22, we had lost a good core of about 200,000 donors in 22. And I think that was predicated on a lot of different areas, mostly economic. But the goal is if these folks have been with me and committed to what we do here at the committee, how can I bring them back in? And so it was a lot of messaging built around, you know, you've been with me, I want you back, and we have such an exciting opportunity to really find success for our country, right? And so really just showing them the value that they were to us in years past and the value that they can be to us now and in the future. And I'll say that out of those 200,000 folks, within a year period, we gained back 95,000. So, wow. Yeah.
That's significant. Yeah.
Yeah, it was incredible. I've never seen anything like that. And it was really just a hyper-focused message kind of in within the RFM down as you go down there. You know, some other things that we had done is to go to the cooperative databases and really discuss what they had saw in years past and what had happened in 22 and how can we really just focus on what's happening now. I think in 20, again, a great economy, a great market, and you didn't have to think twice about what you were doing because, you know, you were printing money in 22. It was the exact opposite and you couldn't get anything to work. And so now you're in this economy, in this market where it's not great, but it's settled, right? And so knowing the cost to acquire donors and what it takes to be successful in a program, it took really just zeroing in on what was working, all the creative concepts that were working. And that's really what we dialed in was, does these few creative concepts that have been tried and true, does it really work with the data that we're using? And what can we bring new to the table that really makes sense, that can buy people in, right? And so I think I tend to look at fundraising at our donors in twofold. It's one, it's net dollars in the door because I'm a political organization and that's the job, right? But it's also lifetime value. It's understanding that, you know, if I am hitting you up for cash, there are a lot of other folks out there that are doing the same thing. And so what can I do from that 30 seconds from your mailbox to potentially the trash can? What can I do within that time frame that piqued your interest, that made you want to be a part of what it is that we do here at the committee? And it was really selling the opportunity for a really great future and also having people understand that what we're up against, right? As a Republican organization, it's been very clear to me, and I think a lot of folks out there, maybe even to folks that aren't necessarily a Republican, that we have not been in a good administration. It's been a bad one. And someone that is young in my 30s, like myself, just trying to create a better life for myself every day, you know, I consider myself to be a good, young, successful person, but it's hard to move forward with my life, right? And so I think about myself as I am one of my donor's grandkids. And how can I make my donor understand what it is that I'm going through and what I hope to achieve one day? And I think we really did a good job with that in our messaging, and it really stuck, right? This commitment to America, this idea that, you know, almost in a sense, like instilling the fear of God into people, that it is truly now or never. And I know that this isn't the first time that people have gone out and done this kind of messaging. But, you know, we have this opportunity to really show what has been happening over the last few years and what could happen if we don't fix it. And again, the message really relayed well. We went out and tested the market every which way we could with multiple concepts that we possibly could, whether they are old or brand new. And we followed the data and we came out with a really successful 23 and really primed for this election year. So, when you talk about big wins, I would say definitely turning a program around in under a 12-month period was extremely big for me. But I'll also say a big win for me was coming into this election cycle knowing about the unsuccessful previous cycle. There were a lot of questions about the program and about the industry of mail, as mail marketing, at least from a political standpoint. I can't necessarily speak as much on the nonprofit side, but there was a lot of folks that were turned off to what it is that we do, or at least just scared, right? And so being able to chart the path to show them that, you know, you can make this work and you can make a bigger impact that goes farther than just the program. Right, there are omni-channel opportunities. There are so many different ways that we can talk to our folks and go out and acquire them and keep them long term. And so, going from at the beginning of 23 to folks thinking, you know, is this worth our time, to being able to ask for multi-million dollars in added investment because of the work that we were doing, and and you know, having that big net turnaround is a huge success, not only for me personally, but just being able to show that we're in an industry that it's not going anywhere, right? I'm sure you've heard so many times that people ask, like, is mail dying? No.
It was dead 15 years ago, right?
Yeah. It's not dying, right? I think it's important. It's something I say all the time, is that I don't run my grandfather's mail program, right? I mean, there's always new solutions and new ways of doing things. And I am always looking for what's new. And I ask this to people all the time. If I'm not doing something, bring it to the table and let's talk about it, right? And if it makes sense to do it, let's try it, because I don't know what I don't know, and I want to learn every day. And I think the level of transparency and the willingness and openness to bring in so many different kinds of outlooks and people and really smart people, whether it was, you know, creative people, data folks, you name it, right? Even bringing in someone like yourself who has strong faith-based messaging, because, you know, it aligns with what we do. It aligns with our party. And so you have to be willing to be vulnerable and to open up yourself in that kind of a way. And I think if you go into it with an empty glass ready to fill it up, you'll find yourself successful. And I think the biggest part of that success is that you win or you learn. And once you learn, you're going to win.
Yeah, I think that's a great perspective. So I'm curious, like, what, in that same vein, what did you learn, or like, what was most insightful to you kind of about your own leadership and experience as you went through this whole process and reevaluated things and, you know, had the humility to bring a bunch of outsiders in to kind of pick apart what you were doing and help you grow? Like, what was the biggest learning for you just personally in that?
Yeah. So for me personally, the biggest thing was realizing that it's this constant ongoing journey of knowledge. That was the biggest thing for me, is that, you know, and you and I have talked about this. I born and raised, grew up a martial artist. And from the very beginning, from the time I was 4 years old, is that even when you become a teacher, you are still learning. Whether it is you're learning from your predecessors or you're learning from the people that came after you, you are always learning. And the second that you think you know everything is the second that you fall behind. And so being able to be vulnerable with myself and with everyone around me and saying that I don't know everything. You know, I am a talented guy, but I want to learn from everyone, right? Mm-hmm. And if I can pick pieces and parts of what I like and being able to bring it all together. I think the thing that I've learned about myself is that I'm a good orchestrator, right? Mm-hmm. In that I can bring groups of different people together towards one common goal. And when you run an 8-9-figure program, it's an absolute necessity. You can't get it all from just one source, right? And, sure. and when you think that you're getting it all from just one source, you are going to hit a wall. And that was the biggest thing that I had realized, is that, you know, it's extremely important to continuously gather information, constantly be learning from your mistakes and even from your wins. And again, I say this word a lot, it's one of my favorites, but just being extremely transparent with everyone about what it is that your goals are and how do you get folks to get on the same page, especially when you're on the client side, you have a lot of people competing for your business. And being able to properly communicate that, you know, while I understand what your bottom line may be, this is the goal, and how can you help be a part of that goal? And I think, you know, being able to convey it and express it very clearly to everyone, even though there are folks out there that are competing for the business, everyone's on board for the same goal. And I think if it's anything that I have been successful in doing, is getting every single person that works around me on board for the mission. And because that's the mission that I signed up for. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, it's been really wonderful. I got to say that in the last, you know, year and a half or so, I have grown personally and professionally more than I ever have in my entire life. I have learned that in a role like myself, you sincerely can't make everyone happy.
Yep.
You know, and that is, you know, not always the easiest thing, especially when you really enjoy working with the people around you. But I think, again, as long as you are honest with your intentions and sincerely trying to do the right thing, it's going to reflect. Even if it upsets someone in the onset, folks understand what it is that you're trying to do. And for me, the mission, the goal, and what I am trying to achieve, it is so much bigger than you or I. And mm-hmm. and that's why I love what I do, is that, you know, the work that I'm going to do is going to pay for races, for congressional races around the country. And that's a serious thing. And so, yeah, it's just an incredible experience. Again, I can't say it enough. I am just a happy, lucky dude. I feel the stress and the anxiety every day of trying to bring money in the door. But the excitement of, you know, the strategy and the opportunity to make that impact, to me, it trumps any sort of stress or anxiety. And it brings me this level of focus that I've always had, but it's just heightened in this role. And it's honestly made me even more obsessed and passionate about the industry at large, because I've gone out there in this role and have asked questions from folks that have been doing it for a while, or, you know, different new innovative creative ideas, and also from nonprofit folks about their dispositions and outlooks on the industry. And wanting to understand that, you know, while I am a political organization, I am an institution that has been here way before my time and will be here way after my time. And so how can I focus on building a legacy that extends further than me just being in the building? And so, again, the opportunity to make a real impact, and it's something that I say all the time, especially in mail, is that I have a small window to make an impact. And that's just been my approach day in and day out. And I honestly can't imagine my life any other way right now.
Yeah, it's a true statement about life in general and this business for sure. Hey, I'm curious. So whether you're, you know, on the Democrat or Republican side, like, this crosses both sides of the aisle, right? In your business, it is a lot more personality driven than the general nonprofit might be, right?
Sure.
What do you see as, like, the positives of that, and what are some of the challenges of that?
Yeah, I would say the positives of the personalities is that when you come into a political organization, you have a room full of killers. You have a room full of people that are go-getters. You have a room full of people that oftentimes come from the campaign world. And so you tell them that they have to go at it 15 to 20 hours a day, 6-7 days a week, they don't bat an eyelash. And so I think when you are around people who are constantly pushing themselves, if you're not motivated by that, then you're not in the right building. And so I would say that, you know, especially, you know, when you're at these big organizations, you have so many different kinds of talent, right? Not just the fundraisers, but the campaign political folks. And, you know, you have your data and your research departments, and you have all these folks that are so dedicated to their craft that it just makes you want to be better at your craft. And, yeah. And what that ultimately creates is this kind of ecosystem of camaraderie within ourselves, because it's almost like we're a band of brothers, you know, in the trenches together, fighting for the next 2 years of our lives, right? And so You know, that to me is so valuable. And I would say that if you were to talk to most of my colleagues, they probably share that thought too.
Yeah.
The challenge is because you have a room full of killers, you have people that want things done their way, and they have their ways of operating and their motives and you know what they think is best, and you have egos, right?
Mm-hmm.
Myself included, right?
Yeah, sure.
If I am dedicating so much of my time, effort, and care into something, it's understandable to come with a bit of an ego behind that, right? And maybe you have the experience and the successes behind you to have that. So the challenges are always reining in on those egos and making sure that, again, going back to the common goal thing, is that we all come, whether you're on a campaign specific or you're coming to a big committee organization like myself, is that the goal is simple: to win, right? And so anything else is secondary. Truthfully, our goal is to win. And so everyone has to do their part. And so the challenge is, as always, is that, you know, I'm a big sports guy, so a little bit of a sports analogy here is that, you know, especially nowadays, these college teams have, you know, sometimes, especially in basketball, they have new teams every year or two, right? And so similar to a big committee, is you're going to have a new team every couple of years, and there'll be some folks that stay, but, you know, people want to move on with their lives and move on to what's next. And so it's all about bringing the different personalities together. And I think that is the biggest challenge. And I got to tell you, Andrew, I've been in and around the committee for, you know, approaching my sixth year in and around it. And we have the most outstanding team. I mean, just top to bottom. I mean, everyone is truly incredible at what they do. I've seen a lot of growth within the building, and just all really good people, good individuals, right? And I think when you can align yourself with good individuals towards one common goal, it makes the workday a lot better. It makes us understand our losses better, and it makes the victory a whole lot sweeter.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're just about out of time. I have one more question that I want to get your take on.
Yeah.
What do you, as you kind of scan the landscape in the industry, what are you most excited about for the future of this industry?
Most excited about? It's a good question. For me personally, it's just constantly finding the new solutions within the industry. I think that the information and knowledge that I've gathered to this day and where I was just a year ago is so different, right? I mean, there are so many things that I came into this role and didn't know about that I now do know about, right? And so it's a little bit vague of an answer. I understand that. But what I have learned in a short amount of time is there is so much to learn. There are constantly new solutions. There are so many different ways to synthesize your data and get the best juice out of your squeeze. I think what I am really looking forward to in the future for the industry is continuing to try to solve the omnichannel code, right? I think I know that it's something that people out there have been trying to figure out. And no one's truly cracked the code, but there's a lot of really talented people that are on the case. And so my plans, my goals for the future and for the future of the industry is to continue to find those solutions in these omnichannel solutions, right? Because I think that folks and organizations, clients, and you name it, agencies, whatever it may be, are going to be better for it. Right, we're going to get smarter. We're going to constantly optimize, And when we get smarter and optimize and perform better for our organizations and clients, then we have the ability to go out there and do more, right? Mm-hmm. So as a marketer, I think it is our duty to constantly be finding these new solutions. And, you know, I think that when you are able to bring things together, it creates this level of success that it allows for, you know, partners and high officials to come to the table with you and say, what more can we do? And I always want to be a part of that conversation because I am always going to be someone that is looking forward. So it's exciting. I feel like I've been doing this for a bit, but I feel like I'm just getting off the ground with all this stuff. And I'm excited for what the next 5, 10, 20 years of my life is going to look like, because I can tell you what I know now and what I know next year, 5 years and 10 years from now are going to be completely different. And I'm excited to see what the industry has in store. And hopefully I'm going to be one of the guys that's leading the way for all of us.
Yeah, I think that's a great perspective. I mean, you know, I was talking to one of my teammates about this just over the weekend, that with the advances in data and machine learning and AI, like, I think this industry in the next 2 to 5 years is going to look radically different than it has in the last 20. And, you know, I at this point, I feel most days like I'm one of those dinosaurs in the room. but I'm still really excited at the opportunity to watch the innovation happen and be a part of it. So I share that perspective. Hey, Matt, super grateful for you coming on the show today. Thank you for being here. What's the best way for somebody to reach out if they want to connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to connect with me, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm always happy to connect. If you want to email me, mkahn@nrcc.org. I would say that those are the two best ways to reach out in the onset. And, you know, again, like I can tell anyone, if you're new, exciting, and you want to bring something to the table, I am an open mind, an open book, and I truly encourage you to come to me, because who knows, together we might find the next big billion-dollar idea, and hopefully we can do that together. So
that's awesome. Thanks again, Matt.
Thanks, Andrew. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again for joining us today for this episode of the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast. Please don't forget to rate the show and leave us a review so we can get our message out to more nonprofit leaders. And as always, feel free to reach out to me directly on LinkedIn or at andrew@andrewolson.net. Be well, friends.
It can be costly and time-consuming for nonprofits to fill vacancies. My colleagues at Dickerson Baker's executive search team can help. Serving nonprofits is not just part of what we do, it's all we do. The Dickerson Baker executive search team has the knowledge, expertise, relationships, and access to networks that are vital for recruiting exceptional talent. And not just that, we actually guarantee our placements for a full 2 years, which is much longer than anyone else in the nonprofit recruitment industry. Are you ready to find exceptional talent? Schedule a no-cost, no-obligation consultation at dickersonbaker.com.